Thank you. So, thank you very much. Thanks. Look, you've all been out here quite a while, and I don't want this to be like one of these officer installation banquets where everybody said everything that needs to be said, but not everybody said it yet. So I really will try to be a little briefer, but I want to say first to Tom and Ruth Harkin, I wanted to be here to honor you, to spend my Sunday with my wife, to wear the birthday present she gave me last August. What do you think? You like my shirt? I was kind of worried like I looked like a tablecloth in a diner, but she said it was cool, so I'm feeling good. But we wanted to be here because you two are part of our family history. You two are making history in Iowa today with the last of the steak fries. And you've been a very important part of American history in the last 30 or 40 years. Ruth ran an agency that I bet a lot of people in Iowa don't even know about, the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, but it has a big impact on whether we can have fair trade and not just free trade, a big impact on whether we actually can sell things in other countries and create jobs in America. And I'm grateful to her for doing that. When I became president, I had, as Tom said, we'd worked together then through the 92 campaign, and I was impressed. I really did like the guy. I hated it when we were running against each other. I always felt like there was something not quite right, you know, about it. And when we started working together, it always sort of clicked. And I love being here at 92. And I thank Iowa for supporting me because I came, I think. And then I love coming back in 96 because then Tom had one of his rare sort of tough elections and looked like I could help. I was just telling the group of sponsors is in that whole 8-year period when I was president, there was like a 36-hour window when my approval rating in Iowa was higher than his, and he made sure I flew in here and he took advantage of it. And I got out of town before anything bad could happen to him. And you reelected him, and I'm very grateful. 2003, it rained like crazy. I felt like I was a, you know, 20-something at Woodstock when I came out and looked at this thing. The only thing is, marijuana wasn't legal yet anywhere. And we were addicted to music then, and we were addicted to politics in 2003, but I was kind of glad the sun came out so we didn't look totally idiotic, you know, doing what we were doing. I'm grateful. But you need to know some other things. Tom Harkin, besides taking good care of Iowa, knowing about agriculture projects and trying to help promote not only the health care coverage that came to fruition in the Affordable Care Act, but healthier lifestyles through better nutrition standards that his friend, our friend, Tom Vilsack's been trying to work through with the schools here. He was, at least when I was involved, the reigning authority in the Senate on the activities of the National Institute of Health and what should be invested and how we should spend our investment money and how we could save more lives and give more young people a brighter future. And also, by the way, grow our economy in a good way. He was, along with Senator Chris Dodd of Connecticut, one of the strongest voices for restoring democracy to Haiti in 1994 because a military dictator down there was putting tires around people's necks and setting them afire in an affectionate policy called necklacing. They were our nearest neighbors. They had been told that they had to go, and yet I was being told that nobody gave a riff about Haiti, and it was crazy. We did it, no shot was fired. Nobody got hurt. And largely because we had a few brave members of Congress like Tom Harkin to do it. And when that earthquake hit Haiti, Americans gave $1 billion, and I still work there, and we're still getting stuff done. And I am convinced that even though they've had a lot of ups and downs in the last 20 years, a lot of it never would have happened if America had walked away and allowed dictators to kill people virtually on our borders instead of give them a chance. And I thank Tom Harkin for that. He talked about the American Disabilities Act. There was another great Disability Act passed at the end of my presidency. And Tom was one of the people that brought to my attention that it was fine to say that people who were disabled couldn't be discriminated against. It was fine to say they had the right to go to work, but did they really have the means to go to work? Because there were so many people who were disabled that say and required $100,000, $150,000 worth of care a year to be maintained. And yet if they went to work for 20 hours a week and earned $20,000 or $30,000 or whatever, I'm just giving you this as an example, and they would be then rendered ineligible to keep their health care. So we were trapping millions of people who were classified as disabled, who were in fact were quite able to make a contribution to themselves, their families, their future, and to our country, by having this crazy rule that said, I'm sorry, if you make any money, we've got to take your Medicare and Medicaid away. And so we changed that in the late 90s, and it enabled huge numbers of people with disabilities to have abilities in the forefront, to live a better life, and to make more contribution to the United States. And we owe thanks to Tom Harkin for that. And since, as Hillary said, we're doing our best to sort of be in the right zone to be good, and I hope not too doting grandparents, I've been thinking about this a lot lately. I don't think most Iowans ever knew that Tom Harkin did more than any other member of the United States Congress to make sure that America was leading the charge and on the right side of the international effort to bring an end to abusive child labor practices all over the world. And so, I always liked him, but every day I served with him, I knew why more. I think the happiest day we ever had together was the day he came to the Oval Office and he was able to be with me as we called his brother to have the first conversation ever had with a technology that allowed people who were deaf to communicate over telephones with people who were not. And so, I'm here more than anything else because the shining life of Tom Harkin and Ruth proves that politics can be a noble profession, that good things can come from tough elections, that people who disagree can get together, work together, and find common ground. I have seen I want to thank Tom and Christy Vilsack for their service and their friendship. I want to say that everything Tom said about Bruce Braley is true, but I'm going to tell you a story that'll make it more meaningful. And I hope we'll make a better case, at least indirectly, for Jack Hatch and Monica Vernon, and for all your congressional candidates, Congressman Lovesack, Pat Murphy, Jim Maurer, and especially our friend Stacey Apple. And I think a mother with six kids belongs in Congress, and I've heard some of those sexists say that. Believe you me, Anybody can raise six kids, can run a Fortune 500 corporation. They can certainly handle a seat in Congress and do you justice. And I hope you will help. I thank Brad Anderson for running for Secretary of State. Every time the Republicans win a Secretary of State job, it seems like they try to restrict voting rights. And I don't like that too much. So that's what I really wanted to say. Now, I want you to think as I go about what all this means. What does it mean to say that we respect our opponents and we don't mind it if they disagree with us, vote against us, do whatever, but in the end, we have to find a way to work together to make agreements, to get the show on the road. They think they're right all the time, and if they make an agreement with them, with us, it's somehow compromised, and besides, they might lose a primary election. Now, this is a modest reflection of the kind of conflict that is going on all over the world today. Hear what's going on everywhere. Everywhere. We live in the most interdependent age in human history, right? Iowa farmers can find out what's happening to comparable crops all over the world instantaneously, right? You follow the price of inputs, the price of outputs, the probable weather conditions, what's happening in markets. We are more interdependent than ever before. We are more diverse than ever before in America. But our main political problem shows you what the world's problem is. Think about America. We are less racist, sexist, and homophobic than we've ever been. But we do have one continuing problem. We don't want to be around anybody that disagrees with us more than ever before. We're living with complex problems with a lot of moving parts that require people with good minds and good experiences and different experiences to come together. That's what I always loved about Harkin. He never stopped being a good progressive liberal Democrat, but if he never did go to work with his ears plugged up. He never did go into a situation and put blinders on so he couldn't see what was plainly before his eyes. That is hurting America. Everywhere in the world, that people's interaction are characterized by constant conflict, winner take all, good things are not happening. Everywhere in the world, the situation reflects inclusive government, cooperation between the public and private sector and different groups and sects for the purpose of getting something done, good things are happening. Everywhere in America, it's true. Everywhere in the world, it's true. In this interdependent age, sadly, in the last couple of months, all we've been reading about are the most painful headlines. But there are some really quite good things happening. There's been a huge drop in the last 10 years in the amount of extreme poverty in the world. The Millennium Development Goals set healthcare goals for people all over the world. We're going to reach them. Maternal mortality is down. Infant mortality is down. Fewer babies are dying in their first 5 years of life because of waterborne illnesses. The AIDS death rate is down. We're moving in the right direction in many ways. But there's a lot of violence out there because power is dispersed. That means that apart from any specific issue, every time you vote, you need to be looking for somebody that first agrees with you and will stand for what you believe in, but will go to work every day with their ears unplugged and their eyes wide open, prepared to reach a principled compromise and to stand up and explain it to you if you disagree. We have got to pull this country together to push this country forward. And That's really why I want these folks to win. Man, this is most important for Bruce's race, but it has implications elsewhere. Look, I've run for office a lot of times. I never tried to put on a television ad that I thought would turn people off, right? So without being dishonest, you want to appeal to as many people as you can. And when Bruce's opponent put that ad on, I wish I could think of as diplomatic a way to describe it as Tom did. But I never graduated beyond the cows in my great-grandfather's herd when I was six doing that. So I'm loath to try to up my game at this late stage. Here's what I want to say. A lot of these Republicans have spent all their time dissing the president and dumping on the Senate majority leader, Harry Reid. And if you listen to them half the time, they're not even running against their opponents. They're trying to get you to check your brain at the door, start foaming at the mouth, push some hot button. The last thing they want you to do is think. Now, here's something I read the other day, and I read it twice to make sure I wouldn't misrepresent it to you. There was a rather revealing article in the press sometime in the last couple of weeks about a speech the Senate Republican leader who wants to be majority leader by getting you to erase all our candidates from Congress and our candidate for the Senate and see only the people that they are allegedly clones of taking orders from. It was Senator Mitch McConnell's speech to the Koch brothers political forum, supposedly in secret. Now, wait, I want you. Again, this was highly informal and informative. So McConnell, first of all, said when he became majority leader, he wanted them to know that they would begin by using the budget to take over the government, because the budget's the only thing that you can't filibuster. It takes a majority vote. He said, so they were going to put an amendment on every single budget of every department to get rid of anything that had been done since President Obama had been in office or before they didn't like. And if he vetoed it, they would simply shut the government down over and over and over again. Now, this is not an allegation. He was bragging on this like he was Einstein discovering the theory of relativity. He'd found the secret to permanent gridlock. Oh, happy day. What I found even more important and revealing was at the end, Senator McConnell said, according to the transcript released from the meeting, that the worst day in his 30-year political life was the day that the McCain-Feingold bill was signed into law. Now, for those of you who don't even remember it, because the Supreme Court's virtually gutted its impact, McCain-Feingold was a bipartisan bill designed to limit campaign contributions in size and to eliminate, insofar as was possible, secrecy in campaign contributions, so we'd all have to fess up, and if somebody was trying to get to us, at least we know who was paying for it. Seems reasonable, doesn't it? How could you think that's the worst thing that ever happened? Only if you thought the best thing that could ever happen was if the Koch brothers and others could run black bag operations in every state in the country and spend all this money driving people crazy and getting them to stop thinking and never be found out. Now, I thought some of my friends were mad at Senator McConnell. I was profoundly sad. When I look back on my life in politics, after all those decades and all those fights and all those campaigns, if the worst thing that ever happened to me was an attempt to limit black bag campaign contributions, what about 9/11? What about the financial meltdown? What about the farm crisis in the 70s? And what about the middle of the country's manufacturing base hollowing out in the 80s? And what about in his native Kentucky, 70% of the coal miners losing their jobs before the EPA ever said a word, with no strategy to put them back to work in other ways? I mean, how could you possibly say that the worst thing that ever happened to you was not being able to black bag unlimited amounts of money? In politics, when all these things have happened to Americans, one thing I know, everybody up here will be just like Tom Harkin was in one respect. They'll be in this for you when you need it. They may make mistakes. They may do things you don't agree with. But you will not have to worry that if you elect them 30 years from now, they will actually stand up with a straight face before a bunch of rich out-of-state donors and say, the saddest day of my life was when I couldn't take it all from you and keep it a secret. So remember, this is way more than just what everybody said. This is about, we are going to define the terms in which we will relate to each other and relate to the rest of the world. You can't get a divorce from the rest of the world or the rest of your neighbors around the corner and across the country. We are interdependent. We are in this together. Are we going to build the future together or play a winner-take-all? Is it going to be conflict or cooperation? You know what it ought to be. You know what you ought to do to honor the Harkin legacy, and that is to elect Bruce Bailey, a new governor, and all these congressional candidates. Thank you, and God bless you all.